You're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMMLP, Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and this is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. It's Monday, May 17th, and today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview with Willow Bascom, author and illustrator of the new book for children, Paisley, Pig, and Friends, A Multicultural ABC. Willow Bascom's love for indigenous art was ignited by living in Saudi Arabia and Panama as a child, and it was fed by her childhood travels around the world. The basis of her distinctive art style is the mola, a fabric art of the Kuna people of Panama. On that foundation, she has allowed the influence of indigenous styles from around the world to inform her unique artistic perspective. Self-trained, Willow's artistic career began when she contracted lupus, which made it impossible for her to work outside the home. And now that her lupus is under control, she also facilitates workshops on living well with chronic illness. When I spoke to Willow last week, I asked her to talk a little bit about her background in art.
Actually, I don't have any. I have no art training at all, except I remember my seventh grade art teacher telling me to use more colors. And writing, I never felt that I could write anything. What happened was I became ill with lupus and couldn't work outside the house. And my love of molas, which I developed from living in Panama, came forward, and I'd always given informal presentations to my children's friends and classmates. So I decided that I would get serious about that. Uh-huh. And I started drawing molas and making a make-a-mola kit. And that evolved into artistic abilities that I didn't know I had. And then when I started on Paisley Pig and Friends, I started to do an art series and realized it would be a great book. So I had to develop the words to go along with the images.
Okay, all right. Now, what's a mola? Let's start with that.
A mola is a fabric panel that's worn by Kuna Indian women on the front and back of their blouses.
Okay.
And it's intricately stitched layers, and they go up and down with the most brilliant colors. And I use them as a model and a guide and a lot of life lessons as well. For one thing, they're not symmetrical and yet beautiful. Mm. So I learned that I didn't have to do everything perfectly. And another thing is a woman will work on three or four molas at the same time. And when they get bored or have a block on one, they go to the other one. And that's also helped me.
Yeah. Now, where are they based?
They're based on the San Blas Islands, mostly off the coast, the Atlantic coast of Panama.
Okay.
And they also go a little bit up and down the coast there.
Now, I'm sort of jumping the gun a little bit here. We're going to talk about your book in a minute, but I'm curious if your book has a page about them.
Mola Monkey.
Okay.
And it's funny because I was thinking about mandalas and madras plaid, and then somebody said to me, "You're not going to do mola?" And I went, "Oh, of course."
Yeah, great.
It's so funny how the obvious doesn't pop out.
Right. Well, and you probably were in the mode of thinking about this already for other animals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious what you did before you were diagnosed with lupus. You said that that was when you decided to stop working in the home.
I was a hippie.
Oh.
So I did a lot of a variety of things. I had a nursing, some private duty nursing and staff relief, and I did office work and ditch digging and, you know, a variety of things. And when I had children, I really focused on raising them. I homeschooled, home birthed, and all of that. In the midst of the women's movement, which was just beginning to think about the idea that staying home with kids might be valuable for the kids.
Mm-hmm. How long ago were you diagnosed with lupus?
About 20 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. Because I remember I read that you said that you've really only started to think of yourself as an artist in the last 3 years.
I had about 12 years where I was essentially on a couch, several brushes with death, and not really there. I would sort of look up and notice that a season had gone by without my being aware of it.
That's so terrible.
And My husband really did a lot with the kids, mm-hmm. so that they don't have horrible memories of that time, and very cohesive kids now. So it's good. It turned out all right. That was my biggest fear, that my kids would be damaged by having such severe illness around them. But it's a progression of medications that have been developed toward autoimmune diseases. Mm-hmm. Lupus is an autoimmune disease that affects different areas of your body. You never know which one is going to be hit hard. For me, it was my heart, lungs, and connective tissue. Mm. The heart and lungs got resolved fairly early, and then the connective tissue I still have problems with. Mm-hmm. But the medications would, one gave me physical ease, so I wasn't in pain all the time. And then the next medication gave me some energy, so I wasn't fatigued all the time. And then the next medication gave me back my creativity. Mm. So that only happened about 93, 94.
Okay.
And then I started drawing, and I couldn't draw because the colored pencils were too hard for me to press. And I was thinking, well, I'll just give that up. And my husband came home with some Sharpies, those wonderful colored Sharpies have.
Right.
And then I really started drawing. I did a Zodiac series and birds, this enormous 18 by 24 with very tiny markings, and I was having a blast. And then I just started going crazy and having to draw everything.
That's a great story. He sounds like a keeper.
Yeah, definitely.
So what do you work in now? What's your media when you're making Paisley Pig, for example, when you're first?
Well, Paisley Pig, I decided I didn't want to use Sharpies, and I drew a black pen on white paper and then scanned it into the computer, mm-hmm. and did the coloring in Photoshop.
Okay.
And I was so afraid someone was going to say to me, well, you're not a real artist if you use a computer. But I've been really happy with the clarity and the colors and the response of people. They like it.
Right.
So it's worked well.
I mean, Photoshop is art in the modern world, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, it's helped artists immensely.
And my hands are such that even Sharpies over a long period of time hurt them.
Yeah.
But I've discovered Copic pens, and they're like a paintbrush that keeps filling, so there's no pressure at all.
Oh.
So I'm thinking about doing my next book with them. And they have 130 colors.
Now, how does that work? Are they liquid?
Yeah.
Coming down more efficiently than ballpoint?
It's more like the Sharpies are, but finer, more flowing.
Now, do you get those in art supply stores?
Yeah, or online.
Or online, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you work, Paisley Pig is your first book, is that correct?
A long time ago, I did a coloring activity book called Islands and Rainforests, mm-hmm. and it was a look at the tropics through the art and life of the Kuna people. And I wanted to do one for every niche, environmental niche. I've discovered that a lot of the indigenous art reflects the environment that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Molas are really bright and vibrant. The jungle is absolutely gorgeous. And then when you get into the northern climes, their art is very intricate and small, and that's because they have so much time when it's cold mm-hmm. to spend on that. And I wanted to do coloring and activity books that showed how the environment and what you see all the time and live in affects your art, mm-hmm. and how your art reflects.
I know that your choices of media might be a little bit limited by your disability, but do you think that some of these projects you'll use different media, or it sounds like those pens might be something useful?
The pens will be fun, and I have friends who tell me that I'll enjoy watercolor,
mm-hmm.
so I'm gonna try that sometime.
Okay. Watercolor's really hard, isn't it?
That's what I think, but that people say it's very forgiving and easy, so I have to give it a try.
Yeah, absolutely. Paisley Pig and Friends is an alphabet book, which I think you mentioned. I'm wondering if you can describe in a little more detail how you came up with the idea of the book and what's unique about it.
Because of the problems with my connective tissue, my hands are really damaged, and I went in for thumb surgery and got my ability to grasp back. And after the surgery, I had a wonderful therapist, and she was very gentle. She worked with me, and I really appreciated her her spirit. So I found out that she liked pigs, and I thought I'd go home and I'd draw her a pig. So I'm working on a pig, and I have the outline of a very nice fat pig in front of me, and I was trying to figure out how to fill it. And I thought about plaid and polka dots, and then I thought paisley. And as I was filling in all these little paisleys in the pig, it occurred to me that I could make an argyle alligator, and then maybe a batik butterfly, and then I had 26 images I had to draw.
Which was the hardest one to find a filling for?
N was very difficult on the filling and the animal. There are not many animals that start with N. Mm. Newts, mm-hmm. a nightingale, which I chose a nightingale. And then I really wanted to use the needlework that's from Renaissance times with the intricate floral backgrounds and such. And I actually found an image that would have been good to start with, but then I couldn't find it again. And in doing the research, I found Northwest Coast Indian art, and it's beautiful and it fit. So I have a nightingale on a nurse shark surrounded by needlefish done in that Northwest Coast style.
And as we've been talking about, the book has an international focus, sort of specifying different aspects of the cultures of various countries and peoples. So how did that sort of come to you?
Well, it was interesting because paisley, while it started in India as a symbol for the tree of life, as an art form, it was transferred over to Paisley, Scotland, where when they had machine weaving, mm-hmm. and they would make beautiful shawls there. And actually, I guess that might have even been before machine looming. But those paisley shawls in Scotland, and then I went to the Argyle alligator, which was also in Scotland, and I thought, if I'm careful, I can use all these different designs and artwork to traverse the globe so that kids could learn about geography at the same time as they're learning about art, mm-hmm. and increase map literacy. Because having grown up in Arabia and Panama, and I would tell people about where I used to live, and they have no idea where these places were. So I thought I could do my bit to improve map literacy.
Yeah. Do you think that's uniquely American? Not knowing where, not uniquely American, but do you think that Americans are particularly poor at identifying countries on maps, knowing where things are?
I think because we're so self-sufficient, we don't need to. Mm. And it isn't a valued thing to know a lot about the world, mm-hmm. really, in our school systems. So, but that's changing.
Yeah.
Especially since your classmate might be from another country.
Right.
And that's opening people up. I know when my kids went to school in Georgia, we were in the University of Athens area, and the class, they had like 80 flags mm-hmm. in the central area because there were kids from so many different countries.
Yeah. I know that you do school presentations about your disability as well as your work. So can you talk a little bit about the presentations themselves?
I gave my first presentation yesterday at the Cavendish Schools, and it was fun. I had 60 kids from K through third grade, and they got so involved with it. I have props, and I have guessing games, and they were calling answers out and filled with questions and interest. And afterwards, I take all these items, like a papyrus with King Tut on it for the Egyptian eagle, and they can feel the papyrus and see what people used to write on. And I have a filigree egg, and they can touch the filigree and see how it works and the different lacy patterns and Amola. Mm-hmm. And they it's interesting, the kids gravitate towards things that they're familiar with and to what's most colorful. Mm-hmm. Children who had been to the King Tut exhibit wanted to see other King Tut items. We have, as parents, a lot of opportunity to open our children up to what they gravitate toward, mm-hmm. and teachers as well. And that's really, as the book progressed and I got further along in it, I realized that a lot of the artwork I was putting into the book were things that I'd been exposed to and had around me, like the willow pattern, I looked all over for that design, and when I was all through drawing it, I realized I had a plate right under a tree next to my desk that I could have just reached over and picked up. And as I go through the book with the kids, if I spot someone wearing a paisley shirt or gingham, I ask kids, can you see that pattern anywhere around here? And I'm hoping to open them up to all the different patterns that they have in their life right now.
And help them to identify their surroundings a little more specifically, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's neat. Can you talk a little bit about the props that you use in your school presentations?
Well, I don't have something for every single letter yet, but I've got a lot of them. And some of them I've gotten on eBay, some of them I found in drawers, and some of them have been given to me. I stopped at a tile store in Rutland. I told them that I was on a quest for some tile and wondered if they had any that were incomplete or had gotten a little chipped. I ended up with a beautiful hand-painted Italian tile.
Mm.
And then downstairs in my parents' basement, I found a Delft tile in blue and white. So I had those to show the kids. Let's see. Oh, I found bark cloth, which is made in countries around the equator. That was actually, this is a fun thing, because I couldn't figure out how to put bark cloth on the map, because I was the Tropic of Cancer, Tropic of Capricorn. How do I put tropics in there? And then I realized I'll just put in the equator and let kids know that it's close to the equator where it's warm.
That's great. You must have been excited when you thought
about that. I think you have to go through a certain level of complexity before you can get to simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some bark cloth that I got off eBay. The filigree fish, I found a filigree egg, and I got that off of eBay as well. And the batik butterfly I took from my mother's hallway.
Now, how do you get those patterns into Photoshop, for example?
Oh, I draw everything.
You draw everything.
Everything is drawn first.
Okay.
And I draw it and then scan it.
Okay, because I knew you said you drew the animals and scanned them in, but I didn't know if the filling was also.
Yeah, for this project, everything is hand-drawn first, although I will admit, for the Egyptian eagle, I drew one wing, and then I flipped it, and it became the other wing as well, because that was really intricate.
Yeah, okay. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
You're not the first person to do that.
But for willow pattern whale, that oriental pattern in the background of the whale, the ocean, is all hand-drawn.
Mm.
So, and then for the next book, I've got this oceanic. Oceania is the islands around the tropics in the Pacific, and I have a lot of their designs that I use for the blue whale, and that's all hand-drawn too, and my husband looks at me and says, you're nuts. But it's very meditative. It's a wonderful calming, and when I'm through, I can look at it, and I've actually finished something, so it's satisfying as well. So, to get back to props, some of them are coming to me, some of them I've searched out, and when I went to a Barnes & Noble, I got to sit next to a bunch of quilters, and they were having fun with all the designs that I have, even though I didn't use quilt for Q.
I wondered, yeah, no, you didn't use quilt for your quails and your quinces.
I wanted to do something different,
mm-hmm.
and the quilters have forgiven me.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good. I'm wondering if maybe this would be a good time for you to read from Paisley Pig and Friends.
I realized when I was trying to choose what to read that my words really were an afterthought to the art.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that this will work over the radio. I thought it would be appropriate, even though it's an alphabet, to start with P, because that was the first letter I did. And we have a paisley pig with pink and purple, surrounded by polka dots, and a porpoise, a pelican, a panda, a partridge, a porcupine, a parrot, and a penguin, and a map that highlights India, Iraq, and Scotland. So, to begin, P, paisley pig. The paisley design is very old. Its curved teardrop shape represents a seed from the tree of life. It is found in paintings, decorating buildings, in textiles, and woven into rugs. Paisley designs were first used in ancient Babylon, which is now Iraq. More recently, paisley shawls were hand-woven in India, then machine-loomed in Paisley, Scotland, which is where it got its name. The next letter is Q and has four quince-colored quail inside a quatrefoil surrounded by quetzals and quahogs. And
that's hard to say.
It is. I'm going to do F next and you'll see how hard it is. Q, quails in a quatrefoil. The quatrefoil represents a four-petal flower or leaf, like the four-leaf clover. Carvings in wood or stone, stained glass windows, and paintings can be found inside a quatrefoil. Quatrefoils are most commonly used in Gothic architecture, especially cathedrals and churches in Europe. And then we'll go back to F. Now the image for this was really fun. I have a fish framed in fuchsia with frogs and flies. And the map highlights Greece. So F, filigree fish. Filigree is used in making jewelry and to decorate everything from slippers to headdresses. Open lacy curls are made with strands of gold or silver wire. Filigree designs are also stitched onto fabric. Filigree jewelry is thought to have started in Greece and then spread throughout the world.
And I love how the filigree is yellow and green. It's beautiful. It really pops.
Thank you. It's so fun. I often feel like I'm not doing the drawing because I'll get to a certain point and that I know how to do, and then I'll look at it and it sort of comes to me what to do next. When that no longer starts coming to me, I stop because I figure I'll put it aside, and then the next time I look at it, it'll come to me what to do next. Mm-hmm. It's very other driven. The last letter that I wanted to cover was an interesting process because I did lamb and lion in a labyrinth, and the first picture I drew was a maze. Mm. And as I did more research towards the end, I realized I had to redraw, so I had a real labyrinth instead of my maze, but I was very attached to the image. So I had to give it up. But in the handouts that I give to the kids, I have both the labyrinth and the maze, so that it's still used even though it was a mistake. And they will know the difference even if I didn't. So L, lamb and lion in a labyrinth. Unlike a maze, labyrinths have a single path to follow to the center with no false turns. Labyrinths are made in gardens out of floor tiles, with hedges and stones, painted on walls or pottery, or are sewn into clothing. And labyrinths are found the world over from the most ancient of times.
So you've got the whole world highlighted there.
That's right. Can't single anything out. And that's the neat thing about a lot of these designs. When you really get down to it, they are all over.
Yeah. Now you mentioned having been attached to your maze. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really a good lesson for all artists, really, because we become attached to what we're working on, and then sometimes it doesn't necessarily serve the whole piece, and we have to take it out. Mm-hmm. And I'm just glad that came up, because I think it's a good point. And certainly for writers, we always have to take out some of our favorite paragraphs if they aren't working within a chapter, or favorite lines in a poem. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to hear that that's true for illustrators as well.
And also that mistakes, supposed mistakes, turn out to be very helpful to the whole process. And you might not see that when you're in the middle of it, but at the end you can look back and go, oh, I'm glad that happened.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious a little bit, and we've talked a bit about this, but I'm curious to know a little bit more about your creative process. For example, you started with the idea of Paisley Pig, and then I'm sure that you would have ideas on the different animals. But when you're working, do you find that sometimes you just have to start drawing and playing with color before your ideas will come to you? Or do you find that they mostly hit you in the shower in the morning and then you have to run to your studio?
I have a few ways that things come to me. Sometimes I will journal at night and try and get clear about what the issues or things that I'm dealing with, what I want to address. Mm-hmm. And then I'll wake up with a very clear, firm idea and rush off to do it. Mm-hmm. Other times, I'll use resources that other people have created. There is a wonderful book called World Textiles. It's a visual guide to traditional techniques by John Gillow and Brian Sentence. It has the most wonderful images from around the world, and it gives a lot of really clear, colorful pictures of the people as well as the designs. Mm-hmm. And I'll go through that and look at pictures and read a few paragraphs here and there and get inspired. And as I was doing the alphabet book, I had to find specific letters. So I read the dictionary, and I was looking for adjectives, animals, and colors, and learned a lot just reading the dictionary.
And right, quince color. I mean, yeah. I'm not sure I would have thought about what the color of a quince is.
I had to look it up. Yeah, and then also from people who heard what I was doing, they'd say, "Well, have you thought about?" And they'd want to share what was important to them, and that would often spark something for me.
What was your favorite part of the process of putting this book together?
I think the most favorite part was realizing that I could do it. There was a point about halfway through the alphabet where I realized I was doing it. There was no one who wanted me to do it. I didn't need to do it. I didn't have to do it. So why was I doing it? I had to really search within and see if I wanted to continue working as hard as it was requiring of me. And I made that internal decision to do it for myself. Mm-hmm. And after that, it started flowing more easily.
And then what was your least favorite part of the process?
Oh, the least favorite part was the process of getting it published. I was very excited because I found out about the Society of Children's Author and Illustrators in New York. And I found out the day before they were having a conference. So my husband and I hopped into the car and we went down. And they had a chance to speak with agents afterwards. And I spoke with the agent and she liked my work and took me out to lunch and signed me on.
Wow.
I was thrilled. And this is a woman who had started out by riding a bicycle around New York City to go to various publishers and places to start her business. She had the little engine that could in her portfolio, as well as Thomas the Tank Engine. So I thought she'd covered everything. And she loved alphabet books, and she liked penguins. I also have a penguin series. And I thought it was a perfect match, and she was excited, and nothing came of it. Mm. After about 6 or 7 months, I realized that she, the resources she had were not going to work out, and that once again it was up to me. That's been a continuing learning in this process of writing, that I can't do a certain point and then turn it over to someone else. It's really up to me to follow through. So anyway, I took it back from her, and then I found out about, I submitted it to other publishers and was turned down, mostly because they said they didn't know what age group to market to. And I consider it a book for children and the adults who read to them. As a homeschooler in my background, I know that the older kids showing younger kids and it being interesting to adults while they're reading to children, it all counts, but that's not the way the standard publishing world is reckons it. So I went to a Chamber of Commerce meeting, and there was a woman who was in charge of a graphics art firm, and she said that she was setting a book up for publication, doing the layout. And I thought, well, I'll just go talk to her. And she told me the publishing house, publishingworks.com in Exeter, New Hampshire. And I sent an email off to Jeremy, and she responded within 20 minutes, and she wanted to do it.
Oh, that's great.
And she's been wonderful. And to have a publisher and a publicist and all the advice and the encouragement from them has just been invaluable.
So is that sort of self-publishing on demand with help? Is that what it is? How would you define it?
It's like there's the standard publishing world and then there's the self-publishing world, and what I've got is kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. I think the process is morphing. And what I'm doing is paying the printing costs. And they're doing the marketing, but it's been picked up for distribution by PGW, Publishing Group West. And already they're talking about doing another printing.
Oh, wow.
In that case, I would get the standard 8% or somewhere around there. We haven't worked that out yet. And they'll do everything.
Yeah.
So I think it's fair enough to be committed enough to my work to pay to get it out there, to see if there's interest, and then let them take it on from there.
Yeah. And it will be available?
It's going to be available as of Friday.
Okay. And that would be
May 7th. I'm going to go there and pick up some books prior to a presentation at the Borders in Farmington, Connecticut on Saturday.
Okay.
Which is really fun because I did a lot of the research for the book there, sitting there drinking coffee and a pile of books, like maybe a dozen books, and I would leaf through them and look at the images and read a little bit about various indigenous people or artists' biographies just to see what inspired them, and then jot notes and then go home and draw.
Is that where you lived until recently?
Yeah. My parents retired to Vermont after living in Saudi Arabia and Panama for about 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave them 2 years in the snow. And they're still here, and they love it. And I'm really glad because now for the past 2 years, I've been here full time, and I love it.
So if somebody in Vermont wanted to find a copy of Paisley Pig?
There are a lot of independent booksellers that have it. And also, it's available at the large chains and Amazon.com. If you put Paisley Pig and Friends into the search engine, it'll come up, and you can also order from my website, which is willowdraws.com. So you should be able to find it if you want it.
Pretty easily. Okay, yeah. Good. Do you have a favorite illustration or character in this book?
No. I mean, there are times when I like the strength of the mola monkey and the gingham goose, and there are times when I love the colors of the filigree fish or the Egyptian eagle, and then no.
That's a fair answer. I would think it would be pretty hard to narrow down your favorites when you've worked so hard on all of them. Who are some contemporary artists or writers whose work you admire?
You know, I knew you were going to ask this question, so I really had to do a lot of thinking about it. And I'd like to say, first and foremost, it would be the Kuna women and their molas. And as I said, I have a lot of life lessons from them. I started out tracing molas in preparation for making one of my own, and I wanted to understand how it worked. So I was tracing them, and I realized that a lot of the strength of their design came from the color. So I started coloring in the molas. And I then developed a way to molaize animals and such, and then it morphed into my own designs and my own art style, which uses some of the mola outline technique. A lot of my art has a sort of a broad line of color around it to emphasize and separate the foreground and the background. So I would say the mola and the Kuna women. And then for children's design, children's books, I really like Jan Brett because she not only does the illustration of the storyline, but she frames it. And I find that I really like to frame things. I've been working on doing things more freestyle, but framing was really good for a while because I had control.
It's so much fun to read Jan Brett's stuff and like study all the teeny tiny intricate happenings in her frames.
Because
it's almost like other stories are being told up there.
That's right. And also, I like a book that you can use when you're ill and you've got a fever and you can't really do anything at all. And you can open a page and just look around and at all the different designs and colors and flip a page. And you're not really having to follow a storyline. You can just be absorbed by the beauty and the colors. Now, I love, as I go about finding books on design and various art forms. And the most recent book I found was called, it's Islamic Design, A Genius for Geometry. It's an absolutely beautiful book. It has artwork and then a little bit of historical information about it. And I'll read a couple sections before I go to bed at night, so I have the images in my mind as I go to sleep. I know that in Islam, you do not draw real animals, people, because it's disrespectful. And I'm trying to figure out how to get these designs into a piece of art and still respect that. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing research to find out exactly, I may have a wrong understanding of it, so I want to figure out exactly what's up. So I'm working on that.
And the author of that book
is Dowd Sutton, and he's English.
Okay.
And actually, there's a series by Walker and Company. It's called Wooden Books. And they've got some very interesting, The Human Body, The Little Book of Coincidence, Mayan and Other Ancient Calendars. So I'm going to look into them a little more.
What are you working on now?
Actually, I had that answer all figured out until yesterday when I met a mathematician. And she asked if I would do a book with numbers. So I'm trying to figure out how to do that, especially since there's a new way of teaching math that starts with units. So I want to do some research on that and see how my art could perhaps work with that. What I am working on is animal babies, because kids love babies, and they love to babies of other cultures and babies of other species. It's just intriguing to them.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to do babies from all, like, animals, amphibians, reptiles, insects, birds, and show how that those first few hours or years of life are, and try and use the artwork that is copacetic with it. So I have the blue whales with the artwork from Oceania, and trumpeter swans with the Northwest coast, and I just finished some pandas, and they're often born in as twins. So I've got two baby pandas and the mom, and the dark part of the panda is a Chinese brocade.
Oh, beautiful.
So it's lots of fun, and now I'm researching the feet, the bottom pads, this nice little round circle, so I could put a Chinese character in there. So I have to find out what's
wonderful
associated with pandas.
That sounds like so much fun.
It is. And everything leads to something more. So it's never just one simple thing. It's I feel like I'm on a ride.
Mm-hmm. How has your lupus affected your art?
It's given me the patience to go through the process that gives me a completed piece. Mm-hmm. I used to try and draw and just get dissatisfied and think, oh, I can't draw. But with the slowing down of my life where I can't do as much as I used to, I also give myself more time on the things that I love. And I realized that there's a lot of erasing involved in making a work of art. And I'm okay with that now. And I can spend the time and I can put something aside for a while and come to it later. And not think that I can't do that and just throw it away. Instead, I put it aside until I can do it later.
Mm-hmm.
So that sense of patience mm-hmm. has come from the lupus. And when I started getting better, I started a support group for living well with chronic illness. And I realized that my process and my illness and coming out the other side, that I could share some of what I've learned with other people. And in turn, learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful circle, and I've ended up kind of being grateful for the life I have now,
mm-hmm.
even though it does have limitations, because I've met some wonderful people and had great opportunities because of it.
It sounds like instead of limiting you, your disease has guided you into the way you were going to live your life, sort of.
The way I could have lived. I got a cosmic 2x4 that kind of pushed me in that direction, but I'm glad to be where I am.
Now, I'm curious if you find that the artwork continues to be a physical therapy for you.
Yes, definitely.
Mm.
I used to say that being an invalid was like being invalid. I had nothing to offer. And every time I draw, even just a beautiful line that connects two points really well, I get a feeling of satisfaction, yeah. and I am not invalid.
Yeah.
And it's comforting.
Everybody needs to feel useful mm-hmm. and valuable. Yeah.
And when the kids were coming around me after the presentation, half of the questions were about my hands, and half of the questions were about the art mm-hmm. and the artifacts that were available for them to touch. And it was great to be able to share how I do things with my hands, if they hurt or not, answer all their questions, so that as they get older and you get that judgment and, oh, I shouldn't ask, they will know that people don't have a hard time talking about it. Mm-hmm. It'll be more accessible to them.
Yeah. Well, it's great that you're going into schools, and I think that's on so many levels. It sounds like a really good match. So what are you reading now, Willow?
I just finished a book that was given to me by a friend. It's called Mayabella, My Bengali Girlhood. It's a memoir of growing up female in a Muslim world. Mm. And we moved to Arabia when I was 4 and left when I was in 7th grade. And I was aware, I got a day off from school, a school holiday, for a beheading for an adulterous princess.
Oh my God.
So it's very real. Very, very real, the problem that Muslim women are having. And I know that in the name of multiculturalism, we're supposed to be warm and accepting of other cultures, but there are things in other cultures that are hurtful, and we need to shine light upon them and give the people who are struggling with those issues support mm-hmm. in their efforts. Mm-hmm. To be more independent. And education for women, for girls, is really important. I remember in Arabia, we got to go to the first girls' school. We were given a tour, and they had lovely embroidery and needlework, and they were taught how to read, but not how to do numbers. Mm. No math.
How old were you when you went there?
I was maybe 5, okay. and we left 7th grade.
Wow.
We went right to Panama. It rained more the first week we were in Panama than the whole time in Arabia. A great contrast. So I love reading biographies of people in other cultures, especially Muslim women, I find I'm reading a lot of. And then I have another genre, which is detective novels. Oh. And this is Sacred Games by Vikram Chandra. And it is a detective novel, and there's so much about the culture in India that just comes through in it. It's phenomenal. It's really, really a fascinating book. And I was thinking a great writing reading group would be to read various detective novels, like from South Africa, and a P.D. James from England, and a Japanese. I don't even know if they have them, but I'm sure they do.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
Well, Murakami sort of got some detective stuff. But
wouldn't that be fun?
It would.
And see the different ways that culture is brought forth in the ways we have our crimes and then try to solve them.
Yeah, that sounds great. What advice might you have for people who are diagnosed with ailments or disabilities that might force a change in their plans?
You're going to feel angry, disappointed, hurt. I think the best advice I have at this point is to realize that you'll reach a new normal, and that normal may be more limited than what you had before, but you can use that new normal to find a way to create, to be creative, to find that part of yourself that maybe perhaps has been involved in the work world to the exclusion of anything else. There are gifts hidden in there. I know a lot of people who get ill have always been giving to others and have thought of themselves as a haven, a source of strength for others, and it's very hard to have the tables turned on them. But that's humbling and heartening. Mm-hmm. So let people help you, and you'll realize that you are helping them as well.
Mm-hmm. You're healthier now than you were 15 years ago. I'm curious what your schedule is like and the extent to which you still have to kind of take breaks and give yourself a rest.
I'm a firm believer in naps. I eating well is good, although I have succumbed to coffee. I can't drive without a cup of coffee because I'll fall asleep, and that's okay. One of the things that I had to learn was not to be a perfectionist. I used to be very, very firm about what was okay and what wasn't, and I've gotten a lot mellower. Mm-hmm. And one of the big learnings from getting ill was I was very into natural foods and doing everything organically, and I had to take heavy-duty medications, drugs, in order to get better. And I remember thinking, do I take this drug into my body and have a chance to live longer, or do I live pure and die? And looking back, it seems like such a simple decision, but it was actually very difficult. And my neighbor across the street was actually a nurse, and she was there when I had to take prednisone for the first time. And she gave me the injection into the IV tube, and we were both crying about it. And yet, I am still here. My daughter's married. She's going to have a baby, and I'm here.
Yeah.
I get to be a resource. And that was not a given.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad that I got to mellow out a bit.
Yeah. Great. How much time might you spend in a given day on your art and writing?
That's really interesting because I've had to add marketing to my art, and that's a tough one. So the balance that's come out is that I draw and create about 4 to 6 hours a day, and for 3 weeks or so, and then I find that I have to go out and see people. So that'll be my marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go out and I'll visit friends and I'll go to stores and get energized. And then I go back and get creative at home and be quiet.
So do you do 3 weeks 1 week or 3 weeks 2 weeks? Or how?
3 weeks and then maybe 3 days.
Okay. Yeah.
And I have a sales rep now, which is very nice. But again, that doesn't give it all to her.
Right.
I still have to go out and I still have to do marketing.
Now, does she work with...
That's an interesting thing. I'm finding out that when you write a book, that doesn't guarantee you a big income. So I've created auxiliary items. So I have stickers with my Paisley Pig critters in it. And I've created cards. So, and bookmarks and such. So she's marketing those, and I also make t-shirts that have various other designs on them, and I have a Vermontitude line. I think I've learned, well, Vermont has a lot of character, so it's very easy to create art that's specifically Vermont-based.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I've had fun with that. I have a bear and a plaid shirt and a moose and cows. And
right, great.
Yeah.
Do you have any certain exercise or activity that you turn to when you need a little spark of inspiration?
I look at my textile book with indigenous art.
Right.
And actually, Google is really neat.
Google Images is pretty cool, isn't
it? Yeah, and that's often how I'll draw an animal. I'll go to Google and I'll look up a whole bunch of... First, I go for realism, and then I type in, like, giraffe art. And I'll see the ways different people have done it. And then I'll look at the real photographs again, and then I come up with my own idea.
Hmm.
Usually it just jumps out and I know exactly what to do.
Okay. And then how about for writing? Do you have advice for writers who sometimes get stuck? Or maybe this would be advice that goes across art forms, but when you get stuck in your work, advice for people?
That's a little tougher because my writing is definitely geared toward the image, so I have a structure that I have to fit within. And I have always been amazed at writers being able to create a story out of the ether. It's impressive. So I think journaling is a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just being gentle with yourself. Don't take it so seriously. Give yourself the time off. If you can't write, then don't.
Mm-hmm.
And take some time off and have some fun and then go back to it.
Yeah. Okay, well, great. Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with me today. This was a real pleasure.
Thank you.
That again was a conversation with Willow Bascom and her new book, Paisley Pig and Friends is just out by Publishing Works. To see more about Willow Bascom's work, you can visit her website at willowdraws.com. This week's Write the Book prompt was suggested by my guest, Willow Bascom, who noted during our talk that many writers and artists have trouble identifying themselves as such. She suggests counteracting this by offering artistic services for free. For example, offer your services to a local food co-op or other nonprofit. Write an ad or make a stunning poster or sign that the nonprofit wouldn't budget for normally. Volunteer your expertise, and when you see the pleasure that other people take in what you do, you can value yourself and, in turn, your work. Give it away, and next time you're asked what you do, call yourself an artist. Say it with confidence. Good luck with this exercise, and please listen next week for another. If you're interested in sharing this show with out-of-town friends, let them know they can stream it live at theradiator.org every Monday from 2 to 3 p.m. Archived episodes of Write the Book are also available on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com as free podcasts. And you can check out upcoming shows by looking at my blog, writethebook.wordpress.com. And a reminder, if you have comments about the show or news about book-related events, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. Please remember that this station is here thanks to community support and involvement. More information about The Radiator is available online at theradiator.org. Stay tuned. Cheryl Willoughby brings you the world of music at 3 o'clock. This has been Write the Book. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP, Burlington, Vermont.